is Chapter 3 of Nectar Devotion, Eligibility of the Candidate for Accepting Devotional Service or for Practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. This chapter describes the basic qualifications for practicing devotional service. Devotional service is causeless. There are no prerequisites for taking up the practice of sadhana bhakti. In the beginning, we do not even need knowledge and detachment. The attraction to serve Krishna is the only requirement. In the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada writes, one may attain a little bit of attraction to Krishna, Sri Krishna, but at the same time may remain very much attached to fruitive activities and material sense enjoyment. Such a person, if he has unflinching attraction to Krishna, becomes an eligible candidate for discharging devotional service.
So then one can ask the question, how does one get this attraction? It only comes by the mercy of devotee, pure devotee. The Prabhupada writes on page 29, on account of his association with great souls that are 100% engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, one may attain a little bit of attraction for Sri Krishna. So generally, people think that one must be detached or renounced to begin spiritual life. Because when we think of yoga or meditation, one thinks, oh, you must be renounced. But to perform bhakti or devotional service, renunciation is not required. In fact, they say too much renunciation is an impediment to bhakti. Because if one is too much renounced, he will not be inclined to perform devotional service, because devotional service entails use of the senses and emotions. It was actually told that one should be, to practice bhakti, one should be neither too attached, one should be neither too attached or too detached. If one's too attached to sense enjoyment, he can't give up the pleasures of the body. And if one is too detached, his heart becomes hard, and he can't really express emotions or feelings. Everything becomes mechanical. His heart is too hard and cannot soften and offer the sweet fruits of bhakti. So Rupa Goswami describes that there are three grades of eligible candidates. And eligibility, this is another way of describing that there's Kanishtadikaris, Madhyamadikaris, and Uttamadikaris. And whether one is Kanishta or Uttam or Madhyam depends on the degree of one's faith, how much depth of one's faith and knowledge one has. So then, Nectar Devotion describes the qualities of an Uttamadikari. An Uttamadikari, he has strong faith, he's convinced, and he can convince others. His knowledge is very strong, and he can defeat opposing arguments. As far as Uttamadikari's faith, he understands perfectly that the ultimate goal of life is to attain the transcendental loving service of Krishna. And he knows that Krishna is the only object of worship and love. He attains his firm faith in the scriptures by understanding with all reasons and arguments. So that's the Uttamadikari, topmost devotee. Then there's the Madhyamadikari. He's described as Shastra Nipuna Shraddhavan. Vishnu Chakravarti says that the word Shraddhavan, which means one who possesses faith, actually means that he has faith in scriptures and faith in the words of his spiritual master. Shastra Nipun means that he's expert. Madhyamadikari, he studies, he's expert in shastras, he knows shlokas, he can speak the philosophy. But he has strong faith, but he has general knowledge of the scriptures, but not strong knowledge. And he's not expert in putting forth arguments on the strength of revealed scriptures. He can be defeated sometimes. And the Kanishtadikari, he is Kanishta. He's without Nishta. He has no steadiness. And says that his faith is weak and easily swayed or changed or influenced by someone else. He can be a Hare Krishna today. If he meets a good Mayavadi, tomorrow will become a Mayavadi. And his knowledge is weak, and he cannot offer arguments to opposing opinion. He has, Prabhupada uses a term, he says that he has faith in the objective. Excuse me, although the Madhyam cannot argue strongly, he has faith in the objective. But the Kanishtha doesn't even have firm faith in the objective. So then the question may be asked, what does Prabhupada mean, page 30 of Nectar Devotion, by the term faith in the objective? So the objective means the sadhya. The sadhya, what is the goal? So the Madhyam means, the Madhyam Adhikari, he has faith. He's strongly convinced that the goal of life is to please Krishna and we should abandon all their desires. If we accept this, even without strong conviction knowledge, we are candidates for Uttam Bhakti. So this Madhyam can rise to the platform of Uttam if he has such strong faith. Then he just has to acquire more knowledge and become more strong in his knowledge and realization, then he can become Uttam. But now he describes, these are those that have faith in the objective. Of course, the neophyte Kanishtha has no firm faith. And then he explains, there are four kinds of people that have no faith in the objective. And these are the four kinds of pious souls that Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita. Chaturvida bhajati nam janan sarkutin arjana arto artati jignasur gyanancha vartarshava. He says, some, they approach Krishna because they want to gain earthly wealth and position. And the example of that is Dhruva Maharaj, one of the big kingdom. The second is that people that are self-realized and they're seeking more knowledge of the Absolute. And the four Kamaras are like that. They were Jnanis, Mayavadis. And the third category of pious souls are those that are curious. They're very inquisitive to understand the Absolute. They're considered in the Naimisharanya sages. The fourth class is someone who wants relief from distress. So the elephant Gajendra is an example of a living entity who wanted relief from distress. So these four, they're actually lower than the Kanishtha Adhikari because they don't understand. Unlike the Kanishtha Adhikari who does, these type of people who want relief from distress, they're inquisitive. They want to know more about self-realization, or they want simply material wealth and advantage. They're less than the Kanishtha Adhikari, because they do not understand or accept that the objective of life is to please Krishna. They approach the Lord for their own pleasure, and so they're disqualified from the practice of Uttama Bhakti, which is free of all selfish motivations. So Kanishtha Adhikari is better than Dhruva and the four Kamaras, at least until the four Kamaras smell the Tulsi leaves of Vishnu, then they begin to devotees. So the relationship between wisdom, renunciation, and pure devotional service is a famous verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, he's describing something of the nature of bhakti. He says, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogam. Bhakti Yogam is based on Vairagya and Vidya. It should be knowledge of Krishna and detachment from sense gratification. So, to repeat, in Nectar Devotion, page 32, it's explaining this idea that one is who is freed from the bodily concept of life is an eligible candidate for Shuddha Bhakti. To begin practicing devotional service, the only qualification is an attraction for it. So one must also, in the path of bhakti, eventually one must give up all his material desires. And Prabhupada confirms this, that liberation from the bodily concept is essential for advancing in devotional service. And he quotes the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter, 54th verse, where Krishna explains that first you come to the platform of Brahman, then you can be accepted by me for parabhakti, pure devotional service. This is Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Shochati Nakamchati Samasravesha Madhbhaktim Labhate Param. that one who is free from hankering and lamenting and established in a blissful concept of the self, he can actually begin to accept his parabhakti of Krishna. So after Brahman realization, when one realizes I am spirit soul, I'm not this body, aham brahmasmi, dasosmi, I nanda tanasya kinkaram, I'm your kinkaram, kinkari, and we're freed from then, when we're freed from all material anxieties, and we can see every living entity on an equal level, then we can enter into devotional service. So how does the devotee become liberated? Does he have to work independently for it? And then Rupa Goswami says that the pure devotee must be free from the desire for liberation, mukti, and sense gratification, mukti. He compares these desires to ghosts and witches. That verse is there in Nectar Devotion. Prabhupada quotes it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti mukti spriya yavad pishachi ridivartate tavad bhakti sukasyatra katam bhyudayo bhavet. As long as the witch of longing for bhukti, sense gratification on earth and heaven, and mukti, heavenly pleasures and self merging in the absolute, occupy the heart of an individual, how can the supreme delight of bhakti arise in that heart? So it's told in that this witch that pollutes the heart can be removed by the grace of the Lord alone. So this is we really need to get mercy from these ghosts. Liberation and mukti, or bhukti and mukti, are ghosts. This material desire to enjoy the material world or become liberated from material bondage are two witches. They haunt one like ghosts. As long as these witches remain within the heart, how can one feel transcendental bliss? Bhakti sukha. As long as these two witches remain in the heart, there is no possibility of enjoying the transcendental bliss, devotional service. A haunted person is not free to act as he likes. He is forced to fulfill the desires of the ghost or witch who possesses him. One who is haunted by desires for bhukti or mukti cannot act on the platform of bhakti. The ghost of bhukti and the witch of mukti force him to expend all his energy in the pursuit of sense gratification and liberation. So when these two witches occupy one's brain and heart, then they force one to act like someone in a trance or a coma. They're under the spell. Maya's spell casts a spell on us. We've become bewitched by this witch. We've become bewitched by the witch of mukti and mukti. So this verse shows that any ulterior motive, whether for bhukti or mukti, makes us ineligible to practice pure devotional service. So what's the conclusion of this chapter? What's being told here? It's told that the only qualification to begin devotional service is a devotee's mercy. That devotee enthuses us with attraction to the Supreme Lord. The qualification to advance in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti depends on the maturity of our knowledge and knowledge of and faith in the scriptures. The qualification to practice pure devotional service is liberation from the bodily concept of life, characterized by the realization that we should abandon all desires and endeavors only to please Krishna. Abandon all desires for sleep. So, material desire is the desire to enjoy Indriya Sukh or Moksha Sukh, Brahma Sukh. But we want to relish Bhakti Sukh. So Rupa Goswami concludes his chapter by saying that a devotee has staunch rejection of desires for liberation and sense enjoyment. Vilma Mangala Thakur, he's explaining Swayamukti Mukulitanjali Sevate Swan. He says that somehow or other I cannot see or feel anything, but I can understand that Mukti is, practically speaking, standing with folded hands, Mukti Mukulitanjali Anjali, waiting to serve him, Sevate Swan. If I am serving Krishna, then very easily I can perceive his presence everywhere. As far as liberation is concerned, I think liberation stands at my door with folded hands waiting to serve me. Therefore, to pure devotees, liberation and spiritual emancipation are not very important things. So in relation to this, Vishnu Chakravarti raises a question. Why does a devotee reject Ramananda, bliss of merging in Brahman, or liberation? He says some different reasons. Three reasons. The ecstatic bliss one experiences by serving the beautiful lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The ecstatic joy one derives from drinking the nectar of Krishna's beautiful and graceful own body. The bliss of tasting the wondrous pastimes of Krishna. All these three aspects of the Aprakrita, transcendental bliss or delight, are lacking in Brahmananda. For these three reasons, a devotee is indifferent to Brahmasukha. Nectar Devotion, page 34 through 45, which we're discussing now. This is it begins in chapter 3 and carries over to chapter 4. There are 28 verses. It's quite a lot of evidence. Arupa Goswami is citing a Shastric proof or evidence or praman from Bhagavatam and Padma Puran, Narada Pancharatra, and others to prove his statement in verse 25 that a pure devotee absorbed in Krishna's service never desires moksha mukti, even if the Supreme Lord offers it to him. Sri Krishna Charanam Bojaseva Nivritta Chetasam Esham Mokshaya Bhaktanam Nakadachit Spriha Bhavet. Those devotees whose minds are absorbed in serving the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Krishna never desire moksha, merging in the absolute Brahman. Those are actually relishing the service of the Lord. They don't want anything else. Minds are completely absorbed in serving the lotus feet of the Lord. They never desire moksha. Sri Krishna Charanam Bhoja Seva Nirvritta Chetasam Esham Mokshaya Vartana Akadajit Spriyavavit. So, this is before we discuss chapter 4 of Nectar Devotion. I want to discuss. There are many stages or steps leading to the manifestation of Krishna Prem. This verse is there in Nectar Devotion. Famous verse, Ado Shada Tata Sarasanga Vajana Kriya Narta Nivriti Tata Nishta Taruchi Asakti Vava Prema. These are nine levels, nine steps that lead from faith or Shraddha to Prem, pure love of God. So we'll discuss some of these to get some idea before we discuss chapter 4. So Shraddha is Shraddha means it begins with faith. Shraddha means faith. So how does this develop? By hearing and reading shastras and spiritual books, transcendental Shuddha Shraddha appears. The word Shraddha implies firm faith and belief in the meaning of the bhakti shastras like Srimad Bhagavatam,
Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and others. So then after Shraddha comes Sarasanga. Upon appearance of faith, or such Shraddha, one obtains sadhusanga and receives instructions how to perform bhajan. Then he starts bhajan. So this is ado shraddha tata sadhusanga bhajana kriya. So then he starts practicing bhajan, and he begins, which begins with guru pada shraya, taking shelter of the feet of guru. So the sadhaka is constantly performing bhajan. And as he does this, his anarthas disappear. And that's the fourth stage, anartha nivritti. As he progresses on this platform, anartha nivritti, he becomes free from his anartha. He attains freedom from anarthas and attains the stage where he's freed from distractions. And he begins to manifest one pointedness and an incessant striving in bhajan. Then comes ruchi, or taste, which means an intense hankering, lalasa, for bhajan develops. When ruchi develops and deepens, it's called a sakti, or attachment. At the stage of nishta, even if the mind is not attracted by one's intelligence, one remains devoted to the performance of bhajan. However, the stage of asakti, or attachment, the sadhaka becomes deeply immersed in performing bhajan in a spontaneous manner. As far as anartha nivritti, there are several divisions of anarthas given. There are four anarthas. Sarup Brahm, which means illusion about one's spiritual identity. In this itself, in turn, there are four types of sarup Brahm. One is Shiva Tattva, Jiva Sarup Brahm. It's called Swatattva or Jiva Sarup Brahm. This is illusion about one's own spiritual identity. Second type of Sarup Brahm is called Paramatma Brahm. Means illusion about the spiritual identity of the Absolute Truth. And the third type is called Sadhya Sadhana. Sadhya Sadhana Tattva Brahm. This is illusion about sadhana bhakti, the means of perfection, and the object of sadhana, which is prema bhakti or sadhya. And four, Maya Tattva Brahm. To be an illusion about Krishna's external energy, Maya. Now, the fourth type of anartha, that's the first, Sarup Brahm, has four divisions. Illusion about spiritual identity, which includes illusion about one's own identity, God's identity, Paramatma's identity, and the practice of sadhana and the goal of sadhana. So this Sadhya Sadhana Tattva Brahm means illusion about sadhana bhakti, illusion about the means of perfection, and the object of sadhana, which is prema bhakti. And Maya Tattva Brahm means illusion about Krishna's external energy, Maya. So this is called Sarup Brahm, where one's an illusion about his own spiritual identity, God's spiritual identity, sadhana sadhya, how to perform it, and what is Maya. The second type of anartha is called Asat Trishna. Trishna means thirst or taste, and Asat means temporary. Means thirst for material enjoyment. And there's four types of this. There's Asat Trishna for Bhoga, or Swarga, for Siddhi and Mukti. Some people want sense enjoyment. Some people want to elevate the heavenly planets. Some people want yoga, mystic cities. And some people want Mukti to Brahman or to other planets. So there's four types there, and there's four types of Sarup Brahma. So that's eight types of anarthas. You can say eight types of obstacles. Now the third type of anartha is called aparad, third category of anarthas. The first category of anarthas is Sarup Brahm, illusion about so many different things. Second category is Asat Trishna, is material taste, or Trishna, taste for temporary things, like bhog, like swarga, like siddhi, like mukti. And then the third thing is aparads. And there's four aparads. Offenses towards Krishna, offenses towards Krishna Nam, offenses of the deities, and then the jiva aparad. Living entities or infinitesimal particles of spirit belong to the Lord. And the fourth kind of category of anartha is ridaya durbalya, means weakness of the heart. And so this weakness of the heart, ridaya durbalya, balya means strong, dura means without, ridaya means heart. So this comes in three things. And one is attachment to useless things. It's called tucha asakti. One is called kutinati, to do wicked deeds, deceitful bhajan. And one is called matsarya, envy. And the other is called swapratishta, alasa, desire for name, fame, and profit. So these are all different weaknesses of the heart. So now, anarthas, there's four additional anarthas. Duskriti uta. Uta means arising. These type of anarthas, or sinful reactions, arise from past suffering. Duskriti uta means arising from past suffering. Activities refers to five kinds of klesh, distress, meaning avidya, ignorance or forgetfulness of Krishna, asmita, false egoism arising from conceptions of I and mine, and forgetfulness of Krishna. And C is raga. This is attachment for objects of sense gratification. And then D is dvesha, hatred or aversion to unpleasant, disagreeable or adverse situations. And fifth is dur abhinivesha, attachment or absorption in selfish activities. These are sukriti, that's duskriti uta. These are various kinds of material enjoyment arising from the pious activities of one's previous birth. Sukriti uta, aparada uta, suffering arising from nam. That's what it says. Aparada and other offenses. Bhakti uta, desires for material gain, puja, worship, pratishtha, prestige, arising from performing sakam bhakti. We must try to uproot these anarthas, otherwise nishta or steadiness will not develop. The relationship between sukriti and bhakti. Sadhusanga is the result of sukriti collected over many lives. Sukriti means shubha, karma, or pious activities, is of two kinds. Got that? Karma activity. There's two kinds of pious activity. One is called bhakti unmukhi sukriti, and the other is called phal unmukhi sukriti. One promotes bhakti and the other gives material results. Material sukriti means examples are like serving the parents. If you serve the parents, that's called pious activity. Serving the husband, material welfare work, opening a school or hospital, digging wells, making ghats, opening a charity booth. Now transcendental sukriti results in bhakti. Examples of are the following. These are transcendental activities which produce transcendental result of giving one sadhusanga. To contact or visit holy dhams like Vrindavan on yatra or prakrama or pilgrimage, to visit temples of the Lord, to observe holy days, and to associate with Vaishnavas, observe Ekadasi and Janmashtami fasts, to honor the Guru on Guru Purnima, to see and touch and worship Tulsi Devi, to honor Mahaprasad. Even when these activities are performed unknowingly, without understanding what one's doing,
when it's performed unknowingly, it's called sukriti. However, when these activities are performed in association with devotees and in full knowledge of the greatness of these activities, then these same activities become limbs of bhakti. For example, it's going to visit the holy places. If you just go there by chance, someone said, let's go to Vrindavan. And you don't know, someone says, oh, it's a good place, it's a holy place. So you go here on a bus trip from school or whatever. Then it's called sukriti. But if you know that Vrindavan is the Nitya Lila Stan of Krishna, Vrindavanam Pritajya Padamekam Nagachati, that Krishna doesn't take a step out of Vrindavan, he's always here, and you go with devotees on a yatra or trosikosh prikram with the ISKCON devotees, and you're initiated and you know the value of Vrindavan, you know what it's all about, then it's actually considered bhakti. It's a limb of bhakti. What limb of bhakti? It is called padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, which includes serving Vaishnavas, serving Tulsi, visiting and serving the holy Dham, circumambulating the temple, circumambulating Vrindavan, circumambulating Radhakund, circumambulating Govardhan Hill. Bhogiran, darn, ki jai ho. So how does sukriti lead to bhakti? So Rupa Goswami says, when one accumulates heaps and heaps of sukriti, bhakti and mukhi, or transcendental sukriti, then that accumulates over countless lifetimes, life after life, we save up our sukriti. Then bhakti makes its appearance through the medium of sadhu sangha. So this shraddha and sukriti, they accumulate and one gets the fruit of that sukriti or good, pious, transcendental spiritual works by meeting sadhus and getting instructed by them in bhajan. So that's why it says that bhakti makes its appearance through the medium or through the sadhu sangha. So Vishnu Chakravarti defines faith as the particular disposition of the heart, chitta vritti, which remains always inclined towards Krishna alone, leaving aside all other methods of sadhana such as jnana, karma, and yoga. This is called shraddha. By associating with saintly devotees, shraddha or faith, which is the seed of the creeper of devotion, bhakti lata, arises in the heart of the sadhaka. So association is the most important. Sadhu sangha is the root of the Bhagavad bhakti. And there's a verse in the Madhya Lila Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 22, verse 83. Krishna bhakti janma mool, haya sadhu sangha, Krishna preme janme teno puna mukhya anga. Mukhya anga, the primary limb, the janma mool of bhakti, Krishna bhakti, is sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha is the root cause of Krishna bhakti. Sadhu sangha waters the creepers of sadhana bhakti through the medium of hearing and chanting and transforms it into Krishna prema. When Krishna prema is awakened, sadhu sangha becomes again the most essential anga once again. So in the beginning, you get sadhu sangha, then you start practicing bhajan and studying and chanting anik and mantras. And finally, you come to the platform of prema. But then, the level of prema, then even more is essential to associate with sadhu sangha. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19, verse 51, and Madhya Lila, chapter 22, verse 45, 47, 49, and 64, they give some explanation of these concepts. Now, sadhus give fortune. Jiva Goswami has said that by associating with Krishna's devotees and by receiving their mercy, one obtains great fortune, sobhagya. In other words, by contact of sadhus from one's previous life, and by the mercy obtained from them, a very deep impression or samskara is formed upon the mind or heart. When it is nourished again in the present life, it arises in the form of shraddha. This shraddha awakens bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam explains in Canto 3, Chapter 25, Verse 25, Satam prasangan mama virya samvito bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kata tajoshana joshana dashvapavarga vartmani shada ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. In the association of devotees are descriptions of my heroic deeds which please the devotees' hearts. Such discussions bestow real knowledge of my excellence. By regularly hearing and meditating on such topics, one is liberated from ignorance, as a result of which one successively attains Shraddha, Rati, and Prema, Bhakti towards me. Shraddha, Rati, or Bhakti, or Nukamashiti. They follow one after the other. Faith, attachment, and devotion. The Sadhu Sangha is a passageway which brings one face to face with the Lord. By the influence of Sadhu Sangha, living entities averse to the Lord become turned towards the Lord. That's why it's called Bhakti Unmukhi. So by these activities, by Sadhu Sangha, Unmukhi means your face, your mukhi becomes one, it becomes turned towards the Lord instead of Vimukha. It says Vimukha means to turn away from the Lord. So they're talking about Sadhu Sangha. So now Sadhu Sangha, Vishnu Chakravarti analyzes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu that there are three types of Mahapurushas. These are Uttama Adhikaris. So we are recommended that we associate with Uttama Adhikaris because their faith is strong and their knowledge of Shastra is very rich, and they can remove our doubts and defeat our arguments and help us go forward. But even amongst these Siddha Purushas, there are three types. They're all Uttams. One is Uttam Adhikari, the other is Madhyam Uttam, and Kanishta Uttam Adhikari. So the first is the Uttam Adhikari. He's a Bhagavat Parshad Deha Prapt. He's topmost at Uttam Adhikari. He has given up his gross material body, and he's perfected through practice. And he has perfected himself through the practice of bhakti and attained a Satchitananda spiritual form suitable to serve Krishna as an associate of the Lord, Harishad. Now the second class of Siddha Mahapurusha is a Nirduta Kashaya, Nirdut. He still resides in a material body with five elements, but he has no trace of material desire, vasana, nor any material impressions in his heart, samskaras. He is called a Nirdut Kashaya, who have thrown off all impurities. That's a very advanced stage. No vasana, no samskaras. Very good. And then the last category of Mahapurusha is Murchita Kashaya. Murchita. These are Siddha Purushas who have practiced bhakti, whose hearts have become Siddha Purushas practicing bhakti, whose hearts have a trace of desire, vasana, and impression, samskara, based on the mode of goodness, are known. Due to influence their bhakti, which vasanas and samskaras remain in a dormant state. In other words, even though they're doing these activities, they can't remove these samskaras. Devarshi Narada is described as an uttam. Shukadeva Goswami is a madhyam uttam. Narada's life before, when he was a maidservant's son, he was Kanishta uttam. And he had vana vasana. So he only saw Vishnu once. Go to chapter 5. Start tomorrow.